Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Market insight and analysis. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
Good Monday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer and David Faber. Futures are slightly choppy here after three straight weeks of gains for S&P NASDAQ. Bracing for plenty of news this week. We'll get FOMC minutes, ISM services. VIX is steady around 20. Our roadmap begins with Elon Musk and his Twitter surprise. Taking a more than 9% stake in the social media company, shares are soaring on the news.
Plus, Howard Schultz returns to Starbucks, the company suspending its share repurchase program. And Diamond's warning, the CEO of J.P. Morgan saying a confluence of inflation and the Ukraine war may, quote, dramatically increase risks ahead.
Also this hour, going to be joined by AMD's CEO Lisa Su and Liberty Media's CEO Greg Maffei. First, though, we're going to begin with Twitter surging this morning on news of Elon Musk's passive stake in the company, Jim, and lots of parlor games today about what he has in mind.
Well, I mean, his tweets have been about having more free speech, which to me means having more scatological tweets by people who don't like him. Free speech has been, I think, what you have on Twitter, except for the former president. So I don't know exactly, David, what he's getting at, because there's more free speech than you could use on Twitter right now.
Yeah, I don't. By the way, that's a shared viewpoint at this point. Nobody quite understands exactly what this may be, other than what it is. I know, genius, right? Which is an investment. Somehow he perhaps thinks that there's a benefit to owning plus or 9%+ for him in terms of maybe the economics. Although, again, when you're as wealthy as he is, you do look for the other motive that might be
right,
be there. And I'm not quite sure what it is. It's passive. We should point that out again. It's a 13G. It's not a D. It's not something you would see from a Carl Icahn or somebody you would consider to be a true activist, where that might presage a fight for board seats and the like. This is simply a passive investment as of now. That can change, but
right,
you need to take it for what it is.
But I think, Carl, the most exciting thing about it is that Twitter's not done well versus other. Well, no, the others are all down right now. But Twitter, I think a lot of people see what Twitter could be. I remember when Mark Benioff, what he saw it could be, a great place for ideas, but also DM being effective. And there's no doubt about it, and we can get to his number of cars that he managed to make this quarter, which are incredible, uh-huh, given COVID. But the guy's a winner. And right now, the people who are at Twitter need more of a winning ad. It's kind of a team that has not made the playoffs in many, many years. And that's not – Elon makes the playoffs in anything he does.
By the way, to that point, thanks to Bespoke, today is going to be the fourth time since the IPO that it's gapped up 20 from the prior close. Only four times.
Wow. And
as for the stake, if you value it at Friday's price, is worth $2.8 billion. It's about 1% of his net worth, right?
Yeah. Which is just stunning, isn't it? $280
it is
billion. Dollars, obviously,
it's
the
stunning.
Wealthiest man in the world, Tesla itself.
Are you going toward what Senator Warren? Is you going to Senator Warren?
No, I'm not. I'm not. Listen, we talk about Musk a lot because he, in part, he creates news, but also because he is the most single iconic businessman in the world. I mean,
yes,
it's beyond business. I mean, he actually envisions things and then makes them happen. I sit here at this desk next to you day after day. He thinks, gee, why not go to Mars? And he's going to do it.
What do you like? He's like RF Kennedy.
Sell a million and a half electric vehicles this year. And he makes it happen. Why not bore tunnels under, I don't know, you can't doubt him.
Deploy satellites and get the internet to the far reaches of the planet.
Right.
Reuse rockets. I mean, it can go on and on.
It goes on and on. Yeah. But I mean, right, 20 years ago, if he'd said, I'm going to do all these things, you'd look at the guy like, well, yeah, okay, great. Sure. Go knock yourself out there, buddy.
Yeah, I went to see him get the person of the year. And he would only talk about space. And at one point he said, raise your hand if you've been in space. Guy next to me raises his hand. He says, how was it? He says, that's pretty great. He said, well, everybody goes to space. Everybody. I mean, can you imagine? Who would ever say, this guy's something?
No, he is unique. Doesn't mean he's any less miserable than a lot of other people on the planet, but he is a unique individual.
I think he's the best. I think he and Jensen Huang are the two smartest people I've ever met.
Wow.
Jensen from NVIDIA.
Yes.
Smarts, it's more than smarts.
All right, well, that's it.
Intelligence is great, but it's a lot more than that.
Okay, yeah, I know smart means, I'm not talking about book smart. I'm talking about trying to dream and then execute.
Right. Going for it.
Right, that, going for it.
Yeah.
It's amazing. By the way, deliveries, Jim mentioned, 310K over the weekend, which you may have seen. Record high, below the street by a touch. Shanghai obviously hurt, Jim.
Right. Well, look, I think that what happens...
Now we're talking about Tesla, guys. So
yeah, what happens when he does it is that there are all these faux surprises. I mean, frankly, it was not a surprise. It was a little bit less than the surprise. But then people can say, when you consider the lockdown, in Shanghai, you consider COVID, it's an incredible number. So the stock goes higher than just this.
And Berlin's coming online.
Yes.
Austin, a new factory as well. Conceivably,
2 million cars, right? He's going for 2 million.
Right, and going to deliver at least on up 50% year over year.
But Steve Scherr's not going with his.
No, well, they have a deal already. Steve was a guest on Squawk Box. But don't they have a Tesla deal as well at Hertz or no?
I thought they did, but he was really talking a lot about Polestar, the Swedish entry. I love the, by the way, I looked at the note they put out and had giant pictures, Steve.
Giant pictures, Steve. Why not? That's what you think of. When you think of Hertz, you think
that's
of Steve,
right.
Sure.
Why not? Was there ever a giant picture of him when he was the CFO of Goldman?
I was in a Hertz vehicle when I was down at the Permian Basin last week. And when I took down the thing, his picture fell right out. Into my lap. Steve.
There it is.
Yeah, they put it in every vehicle now.
It should be. Yeah. It should be. Now, by the way, were you out at Sakhalin where Exxon's taking a $4 billion write-off maybe?
Not in Sakhalin.
But you're going, right?
I will not be going. No.
David's going to Guyana. He's going wherever oil is. And he's not going
trying
to
learn a lot about the business so I can talk to you more,
David's,
more with a more educated.
David's doing a more deep dive about the changes at Exxon.
I'm doing a lot of work on a lot of things.
Well, the rig count data we got on Friday, as I said on Twitter, thank God for the Permian. It's the best thing we have going right now.
Yeah, it is the best thing. And if you want a job, please go to the Southeast. Everybody's looking for workers. And Bechtel, by the way, who builds the LNG, they've got it. They're on time. I mean,
Bechtel,
every project
when you go to one of these places, you see so many of the companies that we do talk about in terms of the oil fields and how important the components are,
and
whether it's Lindy that also runs a lot of the, you know,
thank you
builds
for Lindy.
The things
a charitable
for them.
Trust name, and I don't. No one understands what Lindy really does.
Yeah, I know. I said that when I looked when they were like, oh yeah, Lindy's building all
industrial
that.
Industrial gases are a fabulous business, and it's also an oligopoly. Hey, by the way, David, did you know that Fang Diamondback Energy is one of the 10 cheapest stocks in the entire market?
I did
in terms
not know
of
that.
Price earnings multiple.
No.
I think that's silly. It's one of the great Permian growers. Permian, the biggest growth comes from the private equity companies. This was one of the worst quarters ever for this last quarter for IPOs. Those guys have to IPO, the Permian guys.
Or the smaller operators backed by PE, you think need to actually come public.
Absolutely. Yeah. We need some. Boy, do we need more IPOs.
Well,
I thought I'd never say that.
We're going to get to Diamond's letter, but he talks about the slow migration of companies into the private space. And what that says about our public markets, whether that's a long-term risk to the country.
I think that we're going to watch to see whether Gensler's emphasis on not having pie in the sky when it comes to what we're doing with the projections, that could be very important.
You're talking about SPACs.
SPACs, yes. Very important.
Meantime, really quick, Starbucks founder Howard Schultz returning as CEO on an interim basis. As you know, he's already making his presence felt, announcing the company is suspending the buyback effective immediately. Schultz says, quote, this decision will allow us to invest more into our people and our stores, the only way to create long-term value for all stakeholders. Jim, as he begins stint number three.
Well, we know that he's unhappy with the unionization. The roastery, by the way, apparently unionizing.
Right.
We know that it's very difficult to convince people who work as baristas that they're number one if the shareholders are getting such a big dividend. So I think this makes great sense. It's Howard returning to the company's roots, which is that the baristas should be rewarded. And I think he's probably shocked about the unionization, given how much he's emphasized that if you take our job, it's better than the other guys. So I look forward to him coming on the show and talking about how the baristas are number one. And I think he should do it this week.
He should come on with us this week?
Yes.
Okay.
This is very important.
It is. Do you think it's interesting, Jim, that an interim CEO would be as emboldened to make a decision like this? I mean, typically when you think of interim, you think of somebody who's just there to sort of make sure things continue as they were, but doesn't make any significant decisions.
Well, that's a good point, but this is Howard Schultz, founder, really trying to, I think, set a new tone, do a reset where basically he says, look, the earnings are not my focus. Baristas are my focus. Of course, I want to make money eventually. But this little interim where he can reset for whoever's the new CEO is just fantastic. And I look forward to him explaining why he feels that the baristas, maybe more things that he's going to do for them. The unions are pretty. I spoke to one of the organizers, and they're chiefly interested in having more control over the hours. Now, I don't know. The early shift is something that people don't want. Maybe they should be compensated more for doing it. So I think Howard's going to work with people and explain why the union may not be the best option. He gave a long speech in Buffalo about it. He's an impassioned guy. He has a level of bearing that few people in the world have. And I think he can really talk about how it's such a great place to work. He'll do a good job.
We got beat up a little bit for our discussion on Amazon on Friday, that we didn't appreciate, I guess, union life and how its importance in American working life.
Well, you know, I belong to two unions in my life, helped lead a wildcat strike. Almost ill-advised, by the way. Got a lot of people fired. And my experience is that if you have a union that's adversarial, then you can't protect your people. And unions can be great in this very stressful situation, but Elon Musk doesn't have unionized people, and I think he puts out great product, and I don't see big turnover.
All right. We'll keep our eye on it. We'll talk more about the Amazon vote as well, as we're still waiting for those results to be certified. When we come back, an exclusive with AMD's Lisa Su on the acquisition her company announced this morning, the supply chain, and a lot more when we come back in a moment.
You seek the key, but first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Let's get straight to the point. You want to grow your portfolio to fight rising costs of inflation or pay off your debt, or anything standing in the way of you and financial freedom, right? Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today, can help. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been helping great investors like you. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just looking for tips, Yahoo Finance makes it super easy by putting all the tools and data you need in one spot. Yahoo Finance takes a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and more. You can securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including 401k and other investments. That's how Yahoo Finance gives you insights and helps you take a look at your wealth in its entirety. That big picture perspective is what great investors need. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com.
Anything that makes AMD a larger part of the broader ecosystem, whether it be like, I don't know, office intelligence or enterprise or data center strategy, means a great deal. And the semiconductor company this morning is announcing a deal to buy privately held Pensando for just shy of $2 billion. And this is exactly where they have to be in order to make it so that NewCo, the Xilinx and AMD, are no longer just PC. And joining us now exclusively to explain is AMD Chair and CEO Lisa Su. Lisa, thank you so much for coming on Squawk on the Street. It's great to see you as always.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Carl and David. Great to be here with you this morning.
Well, I think this acquisition is again a sign of where the company's going. It's very high, high intelligence. It's more exciting, I guess, but it's also most importantly in the fastest growing area of the world, which is high performance computing. So can you tell us where you fit into it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, today's a very exciting day for AMD. Frankly, it's been a very exciting few months. We just closed our Xilinx acquisition about 6 weeks ago, and that integration is going great, and we're having a significant amount of synergy there with our joint customers and portfolio. And then this morning, we're announcing the acquisition of Pensando. Pensando is really, you know, one of those foremost pioneers in, you know, this whole data center area. You know, they've thought about how the data center services would be used in the future. They built a incredible hardware and software distributed services platform. And this is all about, for us, Jim, doubling down on the data center. You know, with our portfolio now across CPUs and GPUs and the Xilinx FPGA and adaptive SoC portfolio and with Pensando, this is a fantastic portfolio for the most important customers and the most important workloads in the world.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I think there are a lot of people in the last few weeks have misinterpreted what AMD's up to, really just thinking that you're doubling down on PCs. That all you care about is gaming. Now, those can be good businesses, but when I look at this new mosaic after this and after Xilinx, I think you're probably 50% let's say 50% NewCo, new AMD, and 50% OldCo, and that pastiche makes it so you're a much faster grower and by better higher margins.
Well, we are definitely focused on growth, Jim. You know that. We're coming off of a very strong 2021 growth story where we grew 68%. We previously said 2022 is another strong growth year for us, over 30% in the organic business. And what we see is there is a continuing need for more compute. You know, high performance compute is the fastest growing, the most exciting part of the industry. And we have all the components for it. So, of course, you know, we love our traditional, you know, PC and gaming markets, but the data center is the most strategic area. And now, you know, when you look at our portfolio across, you know, AMD, the Xilinx portfolio, the Pensando portfolio, when we bring it in, you know, the largest customers, you look at, you know, customers like Microsoft, you look at customers like Oracle, you know, IBM Cloud, they've already adopted Pensando. We're very much engaged with them across the AMD portfolio. Xilinx also brings a great set of customers. And so, yes, you know, strategically, I think you're going to see a lot more from us in the data center and really the embedded markets.
Now, in the last few weeks, we've heard that the PC market has slowed. You did say on multiple conference calls you expect it to be flattish. But I do need to know from you overall, because of Ukraine, because of the tightening of the Fed, whatever, are you seeing any sort of slowdown in high performance computing, which is most important for you?
Well, really, when you look at the PC market, you know, again, there are, you know, hundreds of millions of PCs being sold. What you're really seeing is it depends on which segment you're in. So there are some areas where you see softness, for example, you know, education and consumer, because they're coming off, you know, just record highs in 2021. But on the other hand, you know, on the high performance side with the enterprise, gaming PCs, premium PCs, you know, honestly, people are continuing to invest because they want, you know, they want the greater services, the greater capabilities, the greater, you know, overall use cases. And so, you know, we are now launching our new Ryzen 6000 platforms in premium. We've gained revenue share, Jim, for the last 8 quarters. And in this market environment, I believe we're going to continue to gain revenue share.
Hey, Lisa, it's David. You know, you mentioned the integration of Xilinx. Obviously, you'll be integrating this new acquisition as well. I'm wondering if you could just point to something for our audience, for your investors, in terms of a specific that you're seeing from that integration that is going to contribute to the synergies that you've laid out for the deal in the past.
Yeah, David, you know, thank you for that. Honestly, I'm so excited about what we're doing together. I actually spent last week in Europe, you know, with Victor Peng, the former CEO of Xilinx, now president at AMD. We actually went to see some of our largest customers. And I can tell you, even in the first 6 weeks, the excitement that we're seeing from our customers being able to use, you know, sort of the AMD technology scale portfolio together with the Xilinx technology and expertise. We see a significant amount of synergies with the top customers. And I believe this is really the beginning. You know, I look forward to obviously talking about it more as we go through this year and our Financial Analyst Day. But, you know, this has been sort of a strategic journey that we're on, David. It's really about transitioning, you know, our portfolio from one that was much more consumer-centric to one that's much more balanced in the high-performance compute and adaptive compute space. And, you know, together with Xilinx and Pensando and the AMD organic portfolio, I think we have the best portfolio in the industry. And, you know, our customers are really excited about how we put those pieces together.
All right, so Lisa, in the last conference call, you were asked about the fungibility of your capacity planning. Can you shift to almost all high-end at Taiwan Semi? Because if you're going to grow and you're going to get those gross margins, you really do have to do a pivot and take advantage of the fungibility.
Well, as you know, Jim, this, you know, this market has been about supply chain expertise, operational capability. I'm very proud of what we've been able to do in the supply chain. You know, our supply chain has supported the growth. We absolutely have fungibility. We absolutely believe that, you know, we have more than our fair share of capacity because of the deep relationships that we have across the supply chain. And frankly, one of the benefits of the larger company for all of the product lines, including the product lines that we're bringing in, is, you know, we will have that larger base, and we will absolutely work on even growing that supply chain base so that we can support the growth that we see in the market.
Okay, I think people all think that all semiconductor companies are created equal. That's not the case. I'd like to know what you're thinking about gaming 23-24, specifically whether you think the next-gen console cycle is going to be as strong or if not stronger than previous cycles.
Yeah, so as I've said previously, this console cycle actually is the strongest console cycle that we've seen. You know, we see demand continue to be higher than supply. I know that, you know, together with our partners, we're all working on getting more supply into the marketplace. It is still in short supply. I can tell you that we've made investments. We're working closely with Microsoft and Sony and the overall ecosystem. From everything that we see, it's a very strong gaming cycle here this year and into 23 and beyond. And the key is there are just more gamers out there, right? People are excited about the technology, excited about what's capable. So we're still at the beginning of that cycle.
Now, Xilinx, you were in Europe. Xilinx has some great ties with the big telco companies in Europe. Is that who you're speaking to, and they love the Xilinx product?
I really see, you know, if you look at the core markets that Xilinx is in between the data center market, which is very, very you know, key to us. The telco market, absolutely, we believe is a very key market and one where together we can expand. I think when you look at all of these things, you know, telco or data center or, you know, even industrial, you know, what you're looking for is the ability to mix and match and combine the broadest portfolio possible. So you need CPUs, you need GPUs, you need, you know, traditional FPGAs, you need adaptive SoCs, you need things like this distributed services platform that we're talking about with Pensando. And we're able to put all of that together. So we have seen just tremendous interest in actually, you know, customers wanting us to do more in telco and other areas.
Well, this is exactly what we need to see, because I think that your company's been tagged with some sort of notion that it's just cyclical and that the cycle's going down. So I'm really glad to hear about all these exciting things about the new stuff that you've got. When put together, it's going to matter tremendously. Lisa Su, CEO of AMD, thank you so much for coming on Squawk on the Street.
Thank you, Jim. Great to see you guys.
Great to see you. Carl?
All right, thanks, Lisa. When we come back, we'll get Cramer's Mad Dash countdown to the opening bell. Taking a look here at futures. You know, we've really got 1 week until earnings begin in earnest. We got Wendy's just cutting the guide for the year. More Squawk on the Street when we come back.
Every day, thousands of Comcast engineers and technologists put people at the heart of everything they create, like Olu Sheyi, a Comcast engineer who grew up bonding with his dad over sports. This inspired him and his team to create AI Highlights technology that uses AI and machine learning to detect the major plays in a sporting event, so millions of fans have a way of catching up on their favorite sports. Learn more at ComcastCorporation.com.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Welcome back. Let's get in a mad dash, and then we'll get to the opening bell to start the week of trading. Carl just mentioned Wendy's. What do we got?
Well, there's a little confusion, Wendy's. Absolutely, they are cutting the free cash flow look, and you could say they're cutting the outlook, but it's all because of a financing transaction they did. They are reiterating that they're going to make the same store sales, reiterating that they're going to make the numbers away from this financing transaction. So I think those who are selling it have not done the homework, because literally, if you get the, still get the 6 to 8% growth, you don't buy it, not sell it.
Right. Okay. So it's not necessarily about the fundamental business.
No, it's not about the fundamentals. They reiterate that the fundamentals are strong, and that is not, I want to make this very clear, it's not because we went by Wendy's this weekend and my wife said no to the Baconator. So it has nothing to do with that.
She said no?
Yeah, she said that there was a kind of a, you know, that John, was it Oliver? He did a kind of a pastiche of what she does about with the Baconator, and she said no. So I don't think that's why. I mean, some people may see it's going down because of her, that we didn't stop to get the Baconator. The double Baconator, just to be sure.
The double Baconator.
Double Baconator.
Got it.
Which was, by the way, grounds for divorce, as John Oliver predicted.
By the way, they're also adding to the buyback. That may take some of the spin out of it.
Yes, they're adding the buyback. I just think that people see these things. What happens is they don't understand that there's a lot of ways that numbers can go down. It's not necessarily because of performance of the company. So I think Wendy's is a buy on this. $150 million buyback. And frankly, this company's been doing incredibly well. There is a sense among all the fast foods that somehow business is going to slow. But they've done some work about in the last recession. McDonald's is the best performer. Wingstop's up there, too. I don't want to sell Wendy's. I want to be a buyer.
Let's get to the opening bell here. Get the CNBC real-time exchange. At the big board today, it is Bread Financial, formerly Alliance Data, celebrating its rebranding at the NASDAQ. Oncology-focused Zentalis Pharmaceuticals celebrating its second listing anniversary. Of course, we just strung together, Jim, a few positive weeks for S&P and NASDAQ. We've not done that in 5 months.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of surprises. Just take Friday. Friday, the market suddenly rallied. And I was writing what I thought was going to happen, and then the last hour, you just got this great, a really great rally. I think it's good that, you know, I was talking to my friend, the great Larry Williams, who was saying, look, understand that there is absolutely another 2 weeks of up historically. I mean, there's just a lot of historical data about April, and April being positive. And right. I don't want to go against it. Yeah. I think it's still
seasonally strong, although there are a couple notes out today. Mike Wilson, Morgan Stanley saying bear market rally over, made sense for the time, natural place for it to end.
Well, Michael Wilson, he wasn't really a part of the rally.
No.
And I think, you know, the judges had him on overtime. And you know how, like, when you want to make a stake, you got to keep it. Like, you don't want to put it all the way up unless you want it to be Pittsburgh. Scott made him Pittsburgh. He Pittsburghed him. And I think that was brutal when you get Pittsburgh.
How do you like your Mike Wilson? Medium rare?
Okay. I do, but I don't want him burned on the outside, red on the inside. Now, he didn't make a move. And he, you know, but at the same time, I mean, I think at the end of it, you did feel that maybe it would be best for a salad or something, you know, when you eat it directly.
There's a look at Twitter. B of A, Jim, has a note out this morning. The desk says, what do advertisers think? They say it's debatable about whether or not advertisers sometimes like a cleaned, scrubbed timeline.
Look, I worked hard before I presented this proposal to Twitter that they should have a two-track, that you pay a subscription and people have to use their names, and then you can do the free, you know, the free-for-all. And I said, I think that the subscription, you could have some higher-end advertisers. The advertisers that I deal with, because they are, unfortunately, they are aware of the unfortunate nature of my mentions column, don't want it. They don't want to be there. They don't. And Twitter also has to make it easier so that you can buy on Twitter and get the product. Now, Twitter will tell you they're in a lot of, you know, they're part of the conversation, and they clearly are. But the horrendous nature of the mentions does not make it so Procter & Gamble wants to be there as much as they might be. A lot of the brands are there, but they're not. They're flooding the money away from there.
Yeah. Well, they also mention, B of A, that Musk's following, as powerful as it is, and the way he moves things like Dogecoin, if you fold Twitter into that universe, better be ready for some more implied volatility on this name.
Oh, I think that's very true. I also thought when I came in this morning and I saw it up 8, I said, finally, someone has decided we got to buy this thing, fix it up.
Yeah, but that is not really the case here. And again, it is a very significant stake at over 9%. And obviously, Mr. Musk is already up 21% on
that.
That's
always nice to have that happen.
Which is nice. By comparison, Jack Dorsey owns about 2.25%.
Yeah, it's amazing how much more
of Twitter. So clearly, Musk owns a lot more Twitter than its founder does. But I don't know where this leads, and nobody else does. Now, many people seem to believe that over time, perhaps this will result in him having a lot of influence. Right now, he's not looking for any board seats. It's a passive stake. But clearly, the market believes that will change.
Well, what do you
and
think
that he will be here for a long period of time. It won't be just a trade. You know, sometimes, remember, with Musk, you just don't completely know where you stand on certain things.
But how about his poll? Do you think there's enough free speech on Twitter?
I don't know what to make of that. I don't know what to make of
that. The only one person, right, has been, a couple people have been banned.
Yeah.
A former president has been banned, but not many others. And when you ask them about the threats, implied threats, they keep telling you that they'll fix it. But the fact is that they want combat. And combat breeds pages. But I think that the advertisers don't want combat. So the daily average users can go up, but it may not be the daily. You know, maybe a sports team wants it. Maybe a network wants it. But the fact is that if Elon Musk can make it so that it's not as violent, I think it would be okay.
Right. I'm wondering what you thought of Lisa Su's comments about consumer end markets. B of A's got a note today about Dell because so much of their mix is commercial. They think they could be a bright spot in a period in which we're going to be more wary of consumer end demand.
The new AMD is an enterprise company, very little having to do with low end. The battle right now is HP does a lot of low end. People really jamming that last week. And Dell's been cut twice. If you look at, say, Intel versus AMD, what she was saying is basically, look, we're not in that battle. We're not in the low-end battle. We're only in the high-end. I mean, she's talking, goes to Xilinx, goes to Europe. She's talking to telco. She's not talking aerospace. She's talking all the different great things that Xilinx brings. So this is a direct move away from enterprise, just a direct move away. And I mean, away from consumer toward enterprise. And, look, enterprise is strong. Enterprise is definitely strong. High performance is strong. I don't know about consumer. I think consumer really is, in the end, work from home, and everybody's got them.
Everybody's already set up.
Well, look, we always have this pull through, which means that, I mean, even Crocs today, a downgrade of Crocs is a pull through.
Right.
There's a lot of pull through, meaning, and pull through means everybody bought everything during pandemic, and then they don't need to do it anymore. And I think that Intel is pandemic, and I think that absolutely AMD is not pandemic. Post-pandemic.
Jim, I don't know if you saw some of the weakness in the freight-related names on Friday.
Well, I have
trucking,
a line on that. I'm glad you asked.
I think FedEx and UPS were a bit weaker as well. Something called Freight Waves. It's a business that benchmarks, analyzes, monitors, and forecasts freight markets, but also comes out with commentary. And it really moved the market on Friday with this article that then a number of analysts have then sent around who follow it. Take a look, and you can see what we're talking about there. Why I believe a freight recession is imminent is the most recent article talking about capacity expansion always continues well past the peak and can even continue for a time after the market has entered a recession, talking about the bloodbath of 2019, and saying, for example, we were turning down 4 loads for every truck a year ago. Today, we're barely keeping our trucks running, and some market things are so bad that we've resorted to signing up for a load board account to keep them moving, kind of freelancing. So some controversy from this, but it had an impact. The idea that, in fact, trucking is not going to be strong for much longer. In fact, it's already weakening substantially.
Okay, so
and this is a very influential voice, apparently. I'm not familiar with it.
I have better data.
Yeah. You have better data than Mr. Freightwaves?
Yeah, I do.
Oh.
My source
really?
Nationwide covers, hope to be able to get my source to be able to be on the record. Freight rates have fallen 30 to 35% over the last 6 weeks. Spot market. 30 to 35%.
Wow.
But, as is often the case, the debate is, he's going to talk about supply.
Yep.
Do you know that there are now more truck drivers as of last month in this country than there were pre-pandemic? And that...
I thought we had a shortage.
No,
all I've been hearing
ended.
About is a shortage.
Well, that ended.
What, did it end in like... It ended?
It took a...
Some day in February it ended?
My information is so good it's scary.
Really?
Yeah. That's a quote.
No kidding.
My information
Who's
so
it scaring?
I'll try to get it on the record.
Will you try and do that for us?
I will. Is it back? Is it back yet?
You're better than Mr. Freightwaves,
yeah,
huh?
Oh, I'm much better than Mr. Freightwaves. I got nationwide numbers down 30, 35%. But the main thing is because there's more drivers. So, therefore, there's more competition. And, by the way, there's a lot of three and four little
companies. Although you agree with them, potentially.
Well, but I'm saying that if there's
booms are followed by busts, a typical trucking cycle is 3 years.
But there's tons of demand.
And usually what kills it is oversupply, too many trucks chasing high-paying spot freight and high-load volume.
Well, there's more drivers. Look, do I want to be in those stocks? No, but I'm talking about something that could be very good for the country. I'm not wanting to say to buy a freight company.
Freight supply.
Yeah, well, how many times do I have to read from these different companies, you know, the Proctors and the Colgan, there's a problem with freight, problem with freight, problem with freight. That's going to go away. The domestic. What won't go away, obviously, is the port situation, particularly with the longshoreman contract coming up. But I think the idea that you can no longer have the excuse that you want to ship something from Minneapolis to Dallas, that's down a lot.
Shares of Maersk were down a lot. Knight was down,
They're all successful.
As this article made the rounds, yeah.
Well, no, but it's true.
Right.
Except for it's worse. 30 to 35% spot rates down. Now, some of these guys have long deals.
So it's worse.
Well, there's just a lot of drivers. We thought there was a driver shortage. That's over. It ended. It ended in the last 6 weeks. I don't know why.
It kind of reminds me of Citi today, Jim, weighing in on Gary Friedman's earnings call at Restoration last week, which they say echoes our proprietary credit card data. Home-related spending down for four consecutive weeks and now negative year-on-year 4%.
Yeah, that was jarring. There were two Gary Friedmans. There was the Gary Friedman from the letter that he put out, shared a letter, which was really fabulous. And then there was the Gary Friedman on the conference call, of which there was a kind of fright. It indicated there's fright, and the wealthy are frightened. And when the wealthy get frightened, I mean, wow. And he's told me, he had many references to Ukraine, four references to Janet Yellen, two references to Jay Powell. I want references to furniture and to the great galleries and to London. That was briefly mentioned, but David is really yelling. And at one point, he was talking about like a nuclear war there. I mean, I don't know. After I read it, I told my wife, we got to cut back our ordering.
Wow.
I'm not nervous enough. She goes, you are. You're oblivious to what's going on around the world. You're always just in your little world. That's all you care about.
And then she said, and I'm not even going to have a Baconator.
No, it wasn't that same conversation.
All you care about, and I'm not even going to have
a Baconator. Clean your socks up from the den floor.
Oh, no, she did say, if you don't pull your socks, you know how you boil your socks? If you don't pull them, then you're going to get them back just like that.
By the way, real quickly, guys, talking about somebody else who seems to be a bit nervous, Jamie Dimon. Of course, we haven't really talked about his annual letter. In which he sort of goes, talks a bit about what the expectations may be in terms of Russia and Ukraine and perhaps further sanctions, what that's going to mean for the global economy, obviously as well for the euro area, where he sees what GDP growth, there are economists, at least at JP Morgan, of 2% in 2022 instead of what previously been expected to be as much as 4.5% pace of growth for those countries, even as little as 6 weeks ago. And then he goes on to say the Federal Reserve and the government did the right thing by taking bold, dramatic actions following the misfortune unleashed by the pandemic. It worked, but also in hindsight, the medicine, as in fiscal spending and QE, of course, was probably too much, lasted too long. And the Fed gets it just right. We can have years of growth and inflation will eventually start to recede. But he goes on to say, who knows in a way. And one thing he predicts is volatile markets.
Yeah, it didn't. I had the usual parts about how America's great, but A little bit about fintech there, but there and how he's handicapped by having to have, you know, has all those deposits. But overall, when I read it again, I had the feeling of restoration of RH, which is that you need to be more worried if you're invested. I mean, the takeaway if you read this is, well, I got to cut back a little.
Right.
And I don't know if he meant that, to have that happen, but it made me feel much more uncertain about the world. And this, I'm hoping it's very interesting. Is the United States going for a tie or for a win in Ukraine? I mean, are we just settling for this Russia being this way? Because when you read this note, he's really kind of saying that there's the West has gotten together, and that's amazing, but that and that they have to go to China and say, listen, we need your help to end this war, basically. If that happens, then there's no reason to be as concerned as he is. But if it doesn't happen, I understand. Russia, again, size of Italy in terms of GDP, size of Texas, and yet calling all the shots in this world right now.
The images in Buka over the weekend are just unbelievable, just heart-shattering. By the way, Goldman today does name JPM top pick going into earnings a week from today. Based on better fees relative to Wells or Morgan Stanley.
I think that was a good, interesting advanced micro. No one listened. Stocks was up $1.07, and now it's going right down. People don't want the semis. They don't want the banks. So I think that J.P. Morgan is that's a great note, but no one's buying it. They're just not buying it. And it's really incredible to me because I think the stock is cheap, but it just doesn't seem to matter.
Right. We'll see what happens in a week. When we come back, David's got an exclusive with Liberty Media's Greg Maffei talking about a wide range of topics, including his recent announcement about Formula One's Grand Prix coming to Vegas. As we go to break, kind of a light week for macro. We will get ISM services tomorrow. 2-year got almost to 2.5 today, and the 2s-10s still inverted. Back in a moment.
Formula One and Liberty Media announcing last week its third U.S. Grand Prix will be held in Las Vegas next year. Joining us now to discuss that and a lot of other things, Greg Maffei, Liberty Media's president and CEO. Greg, always good to have you. Let's start off on Vegas, 2023. You guys also, though, I know, are serving as the promoter and I guess also taking on, therefore, the risk of the business side of the race. That's different, right, than what goes on in Miami and Austin, for example, isn't it? Why?
Well, hello, David. Thank you for having me. You're correct. The role we're assuming in Las Vegas is broader than we normally have, where we have a local partner who does most of the arrangement, takes a lot of the ticket risk, works on local sponsorship and the like. Here, because of the nature of Vegas, because of the opportunity we saw, because it's probably close to our home office in Denver, all those set up well for us to take on an enlarged role here.
And what are your expectations when things get moving? I mean, you've now got 3 sites in the U.S. Viewership seems to be up strongly. Your stock price, actually, Greg, has had a heck of a year at this point as well. You know, what does Vegas add? Why was there a need for a third venue in the U.S.?
Well, I don't think I would describe it, David, as a need. I would describe it as an opportunity. You rightly noted that last year in Austin, we had an amazing race, the largest race in the history of Formula One in terms of attendees, and up probably about 5 times what it was 5 years ago in terms of attendees. We have an upcoming race, inaugural race in Miami, May 6th to 8th, sold out in about 36 hours. Tickets are trading in the secondary market for huge premiums. So demand is very strong. So the opportunity to continue to ride on that demand, as you noted, the strength in viewership, both on ESPN and with Drive to Survive, the opportunity to capitalize on that, to recognize our growing fan base here in the U.S., recognize the strength of sponsorship here in the U.S., all of those, Vegas set that opportunity up and the opportunity to capitalize more.
Yeah, you mentioned ESPN. A number of your investors have asked me, and therefore I'll ask you, you know, a renegotiation with you, ESPN, about fees. What are your expectations there? When will that begin?
Well, that's ongoing. This year we're on ESPN, and next year we're looking for a broadcast partner. We have a lot of interest. ESPN's been a great partner. They got a very good deal because we've had rising popularity, and they've capitalized on that as well. Our hope is we'll find a great partner going forward, which could be ESPN or it could be somebody else. and is likely to be at a much better price for us. It's hopefully still good for our partners, for our broadcast partners, too.
Oh, Greg, it's great to see you. Jim Cramer, been a long time. Can you talk to us about the competition? Look, this was a Mercedes thing. I mean, Mercedes won every single time. And I kind of got bored with it. But you've got many different competitors now. The Red Bull seemed very good. So what are you thinking? Are you thinking that this is the beginning of a new era where Mercedes doesn't win every year?
Yeah, I do think that, Jim. I think what has happened is over the last 5 years, we've had a series of changes to our relationship with the teams under the agreement, the Concord Agreement. And there were probably three or four things that were seminal in making this a more competitive market. First, a new car design, which throws off less drag and gives more potential for overtaking. Second, a cost cap, which brought the field much closer in terms of spending. Third, some leveling out of how we paid out the winning revenues. Basically, the team shared the profits with us and it was very heavily stacked. We evened it out a little more so that the midfield, middle teams can do better. And lastly, we created these teams as franchises. Before, we could add or subtract a team at our will. Now the teams are franchises, which really attracted investment into the middle level teams. All of that has led to a far more competitive environment. And we've seen teams like Haas, which were traditionally very much laggards, be very competitive this year. We've seen Ferrari renewed and in front of the pack. So a lot of excitement, and I think we'll see more through the rest of the season.
All right. Well, Greg, our viewers have been able to take a look at your stock price over the last year. And, again, a question there on cap structure, because that's what people come to expect from a Liberty company, that you're going to optimize. Too late to buy back stock?
Well, we did buy back some stock in the prior quarter, and we do have an open to purchase. So we'll see.
Just a we'll see. That's all I get out of you? A we'll see?
We'll see.
What does that mean?
This is Greg Maffei.
Yeah, what does that mean?
We tend to express our openness and willingness to buy. We tend not to absolutely communicate our exact plans. We just think that's smarter.
Understood. All right. And while we have you, let's move on to a couple of other areas as well. A company, it's funny, you own as much as 30% now, Charter. I guess it's accreted up a bit because of their own buyback. Greg, I continue to hear concerns about people who invest in cable, of the building that's going on by the likes of AT&T. You know, you guys seem to keep downplaying it, and I'm curious. 12 million homes that they're going after, underbuilt, building where they already have copper. Why isn't that a real potential competitive threat to the likes of Charter and or other operators?
Yeah, a couple things. First, David, we're actually about 26% of Charter, and that's where we're capped.
That's what I thought. I'm sorry. I checked that and somehow I saw a different number. But okay, sorry. Thank you.
No problem. No problem. Just clarifying. Secondly, I think AT&T has actually expressed that they're going to go for 16 million homes. I remain a little more dubious. They're in about 14-15% of our fiber, of our footprint that they've already overbuilt. And probably, as is human nature, they've overbuilt the easiest, the aerial, and the most densely populated, because that's the biggest opportunity. I think we've fared very well, Charter, in those territories and continue to grow even where they have fiber. And I think the road ahead for them on building out is probably more difficult than the road behind.
Finally, baseball season starting. You're the world champions. I'll say it once. Although somehow you
Thank
let
you.
Freddie Freeman leave. Don't know how you managed to do that. But you are the champions. There was a strike. Do you see it as debilitating at all in terms of the season? Any lasting impact from the work stoppage? Obviously, the season's getting going very soon.
Yeah, I think first I'm excited for the season. We were sad to see Freddie go to the Dodgers. But as you know, we signed Matt Olson and several other players. I feel our bullpen is particularly well set up. So I'm very excited about the coming season. And it turns out the Mets didn't buy every player who was available. There was not, as you know, a strike, but actually a lockout. And I'm glad that the MLBPA and the MLB were able to come to terms. I don't believe there will be lasting ramifications. I see a lot of excitement out there for what's going to be ahead for baseball. And certainly there's a lot of excitement in what's ahead for baseball in Atlanta.
Yeah. And finally, your SPAC. You still haven't done a deal, have you? Any chance of getting one done?
Well, we hope so. We have a lot of prospects we're working with. We have a lot of opportunities. It's obviously a difficult environment for SPACs, but in some ways, I think that creates the opportunity for a strong corporate player like Liberty, who's got not only a strong investor base in our SPAC, but the potential to backstop our SPAC either through redemptions or an incremental pipe on our own. So all of those, I think, actually create opportunity. We're hopeful, we're optimistic, and as I said, we're working on a bunch of interesting things.
All right, Greg, always good to have you. Look forward to seeing you again, perhaps in person as soon as we can as well. Greg Maffei, CEO of Liberty.
Thanks to all of you.
Thank you.
Jim, what are we going to do? Stop trading or what's on tonight?
Well, you know, CNBC's on the McLaren car. I think McLaren is going to be a top five. McLaren's very exciting. This whole thing's very exciting.
So
Netflix.
We're a sponsor of the McLaren car?
It's very exciting. And I've got to tell people, it's very addictive. And I used to be addicted to just NASCAR. I'm going for this. I'm not kidding. My office is very excited. Younger people.
I know. Wish we could have showed some video.
Why didn't we have it?
I don't know. Maybe a rights
maybe
problem.
Maybe a McLaren passing Mercedes. By the way, Ferrari's very interesting. The whole thing is exciting because it used to be eight times Mercedes. And now Mercedes is like just one of many. Okay, so we have Qualcomm announcing a big acquisition, which I think is going to matter tremendously because Qualcomm's going to be not just cell phone. And then everyone remember
they closed. They closed the acquisition.
Yeah, closed it. Yeah. Everyone remember Mark Lurie was running a Walmart, the Walmart.com basically. And before that, he did diapers.com and he's done jet.com. Well, he's doing a thing called Wonder Truck. And I've used it. It's the most exciting thing. I mean, you Bobby Flay comes to your, well, it's not Bobby Flay himself, comes to make a truck right to your house, okay? And you order and they make it right there. And it is just extraordinary. I'm in a test town, Summit's test town, Westfield. If this comes to you, it's going to change your life. It's going to change your life.
Fabulous.
I don't know about urban, but you know, you can order Chinese for one person, Mexican for another. The truck comes. I wouldn't get in. I tried to get in the truck. I was knocking. They wouldn't let me in. But Wonder Truck is the future.
What can't wait to hear about it. I'll see you tonight. Mad Money at 6 p.m.
You've been listening to the opening hour of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.